Welcome back. It is a Friday, the 22nd day of March, 2013. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and yes, we are live, or at least as close to live as we normally get for the news show. The show, in fact, is being recorded this morning, and I appreciate your patience over the last few days. Obviously, we have done more reruns than I normally do, but that's because your host has been traveling a bit, had to make a trip to northern Colorado, do a bunch of business up there, and things were just hectic enough that it was necessary to rerun some of the news from earlier in the week. But you know what? The news itself was pretty much a rerun anyway. And I say that because when it comes to really important stuff that's been going on, yes, there's a number of minor things that are certainly worth talking about over the last 3 or 4 days. But in terms of a story that I would say really is, on the one hand, a repeat, but on the other hand, certainly something that people need to pay attention to. It's Cyprus. It's the theft of what people thought was their own money and how all that's going to play out. And by the way, will this be the first round of shots, and they're economic shots in this case, that are being fired in World War III? Again, time will tell, but when it comes to dominoes falling and important events, I will submit to you that there isn't much more important happening than what is going on in Cyprus and what all of the things that are happening there reveal. It's a test case for the New World Order and those who would seek to control what's left of free markets and free people in the world. It's a harbinger of things to come, and it's most certainly an indicator of exactly where we are and what's been going on. And we'll have an update on that in just a few minutes, but meanwhile, I do want to get started off with a few of the other things that have been going on around the nation and around the world. And yes, there's also more going on in the world than Israel, at least so far as we're being told, gushing over the Obama-Sias visit there. Are the photo ops of him and Bibi being so buddy-buddy the truth, or is the truth a lot closer to what we've been seeing for a number of years? Hey, when it's the press and the president, you got to have a lot of skepticism. There is, however, one story that I think is interesting. It comes from Breitbart, and it says that Carolyn Glick, the senior contributing editor to the Jerusalem Post, has said, in remarks that weren't quite so well covered, that the Israeli people consider President Obama to be, quote, a hostile president overall. This in a Washington, D.C. interview in a show called Mornings on the Mall with WMAL-FM. Where Glick said the Israeli people, quote, can't figure out what he's doing here, when asked about the mood in Jerusalem as the president's plane touched down for the first time in his presidency. Quote, essentially his goal is to empower the unelectable, incredibly radical left in Israel, to put pressure on the Israeli government for whatever concessions he wants it to make to the PLO, said Glick. In evaluating the reasons, Obama will be meeting with university students and members of the Palestinian government during his visit. Now let's just take a look at a couple of, well, I'll call them weird stories that show up and give us perhaps a bit more insight as to what the heck is going on around the nation. Here's one from Fox News that says a Florida Atlantic University student said he was punished after he refused the directive of a professor at that august university to stomp on a piece of paper upon which had been written the word Jesus. The university, meanwhile, is defending the assignment as a lesson in debate. Quote, I'm not going to be sitting in a class having my religious rights desecrated, said student Ryan Rotella to television station WPEC. I truly see this as I'm being punished. Rotella, who's a devout Mormon, said the instructor in what was called an intercultural communications class told the students to write the name Jesus on a sheet of paper, put the paper on the floor, and then he said, stand up and stomp on it. Quote, I picked up the paper from the floor and put it right back on the table. The young college student told the instructor, one Deandra Poole, that the assignment was insulting and offensive, and then said to the professor, with all due respect to your authority as a professor, I do not believe what you told us to do was appropriate, he said. I believe it was unprofessional, and I was deeply offended by what you told me to do. So, the student took his concerns to Poole's supervisor, whereupon he was promptly suspended from the class, and the professor did not return calls seeking comment. However, the individual in question here does have a Ph.D. from Howard University and is authoring a book entitled Obamamania, The Rise of a Mythical Hero. Now get this. A university spokesperson said they couldn't comment about Rotella's case because of student privacy laws. But of course, they're still defending the instructor, saying, as with any academic lesson, the exercise was meant to encourage students to view issues from many perspectives, especially, of course, those that are hostile to the Almighty, your host notes, in direct relation with the objectives of the course. And come to think of it, folks, it's those objectives of the course that I suspect are becoming increasingly obvious. And not only that, but while at times the topics discussed may be sensitive, said Naomi Martin, the university's director of School of Communication and Multimedia Studies, a university environment is a venue for such dialogue and debate, as long, of course, as you don't actually take the side that they hate, that is, that same aforementioned creator and God of the Bible. The Fox story went on to quote Paul Kenger, executive director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College, who told the news source that he's not surprised by the classroom lesson. Quote, "These are the new secular disciples of diversity and tolerance, empty buzzwords that make liberals and progressives feel good, why they often refuse to tolerate and sometimes even assault traditional Christian and conservative beliefs," said Kenger. He said that classes like the one at Florida Atlantic University demonstrate the contempt that many public institutions hold for people of faith. It also reflects, he said, the rising confidence and aggression of the new secularists and atheists, especially at our sick and surreal modern universities. And he added that he wondered whether the instructor would dare to do such a thing with the name of Mohammed. And as for me, folks, at this point, all I can add is, I have a suspicion that Ryan Rotella is just plain not getting his money's worth at the Florida University. I wonder how long it'll take him to figure that out. This next item comes from Japan, where passengers at the Narita International Airport are being exposed and conditioned to the New World Order identification technology of the future. A trial demonstration of what they call the non-stop gate for passengers is taking place at Narita International. The passenger processing test will allow travelers to progress through the terminal area without having to stop and provide the pesky identification by instead using automated biometric IDs. All of this courtesy of a new security system provided by NEC, which uses cameras, facial recognition, and all kinds of other high-tech stuff to identify passengers and to make sure that they'll be permitted to travel. From MedPage Today and EverydayHealth.com comes word that, gee, could there be any relation to Obamacare? More doctors are planning to retire early. Some 6 in 10 physicians say it's likely that many of their colleagues will retire earlier than planned over the next 1 to 3 years. 62% said, in fact, that it's likely their colleagues will retire earlier than planned, according to a study from the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions. This perception is uniform across age, gender, and specialty. The survey of more than 600 doctors found that many physicians have an increasingly pessimistic outlook when it comes to the future of medicine, and they cite eroding autonomy and falling income. But it's funny to your host that the story doesn't spend much time talking about the reasons why. 55% of surveyed doctors, for example, believe that others will scale back their hours because of the way medicine is changing, but the survey didn't elaborate greatly on how or why. 3/4 think that the best and brightest may no longer consider a career in medicine now. 2/3 say they believe physicians and hospitals will become more integrated in coming years, and some 40% of doctors report that their take-home pay has decreased since 2011. And finally, at this point only, does the story get around to telling us that among physicians reporting that their pay has been cut, most of them blame the Affordable Care Act. And almost half of all doctors believe their income would drop yet again this year as a result of so-called health reform. Ah, see, it finally does come out. Doctors who can see the handwriting on the wall and acknowledge what socialized medicine is doing to their profession don't want to put their eggs in that basket any more than savers, first in Cyprus and then in the rest of Europe and eventually all over the world, realize that your money isn't any safer in a socialist regime either. And neither, of course, are what were once called private property rights in a nation that thinks you don't have any. And that's especially true, evidently, of those things that were once so sacrosanct that they were written up in the Second Amendment and said, shall not be infringed. Well, earlier in the week, no surprise, the big story was that the evil Dianne Feinstein had given up on the assault weapons bill. Of course, the truth is, don't you believe it? Associated Press is saying today that gun control legislation in Senate debates next month. Yeah, we'll just wait a while. Maybe we'll have another high-profile event in the meanwhile anyway. Will include an expansion of federal background checks for firearms buyers. Of course, you won't be permitted to buy or sell without the mark. This from Majority Leader Harry Reid in what was called a victory for advocates of gun restrictions. As you probably are aware, and the Associated Press is going to tell you once again, Obama and many supporters of curbing guns and essentially raping what's left of the Bill of Rights, although the waste stream press will never, ever report it that way, consider an expansion of the system to private gun sales to be the most effective response that so-called lawmakers could make, as the plans to destroy the remaining shreds of the Bill of Rights move into ever higher gear. And here from Ground Zero in the West and the War on Rights, Colorado, comes word from the Denver Compost, one of the most evil of the high-profile papers in the region when it comes to knee-jerk support for socialist causes, that Governor John Hickenlooper, may his name be forgotten, signed three gun bills into what is laughably now called law just a day or so ago. 8 months to the day after a gunman, it says, opened fire in an Aurora movie theater where, of course, all the patrons were conveniently disarmed. And 4 months after he, that evil governor, said it was time for Colorado to have a discussion about gun control, it turns out to have been the same kind of discussion that a prison warden has with the inmates. What I find interesting is that the Denver Compost doesn't mention in here, in their lead-in, just how many days it was since the sellout of the Colorado legislature to Washington. But you do have to love the way all this propaganda is packaged. You know, it's all about how the West has now been violated, and gun control is making its way into a place that even the most liberal thought people just wouldn't tolerate. Get this second paragraph in the story. The bill signing took place in his office at the state capitol, 22 miles east of where frontiersman Buffalo Bill Cody is buried, and no doubt, of course, spinning. A tourist attraction in a state noted for its Wild West and independent background. Thus, of course, the reason why the Compost is so bent on pointing out the symbolic importance of the tyranny test case here. Colorado, it says, now joins New York and the tyranny there as the first two states to pass stricter anti-constitutional gun laws following the latest false flag event, the high-profile Newtown, Connecticut shooting. One of the bills was a magazine ban. The other requires the infamous Mark of the Beast, the universal background checks, including for what are laughably called private gun sales. And the third charges gun customers for the costs of the background checks. It's not enough, in other words, that they violate your rights, but they want to stick you with the bill, too. And there's no limit in the bill on just how big it can be, either. More honest reporters, while still not acknowledging the Mark of the Beast atmosphere here, do at least admit that what has been done is really just an additional tax on gun purchases by Big Brother. Normally that would be about as much as I could take of this bit of propaganda, but there is a quote down in the story that really rubbed me the wrong way. Gotta read that one while we're on it. Governor Chicken Pooper, is that the right name? I forget. Whatever it was, said some time ago that, quote, I bet I had close to 100 discussions with Colorado citizens on the eastern plains, western mountain towns, and all up and down the Front Range, the man lied. I think I can count on both hands the number of people who had a problem with it. In other words, the evil that they were perpetrating and slamming down the throats of these formerly free people. I think I can count on both hands the number of people who had a problem with it once we sat down and talked about it. Unquote. What a lie. I don't think he even counted the number of sheriffs who had a problem with it publicly. And when all is said and done, I'm still picturing the Godfather from the famous movie where he said, "We made him an offer they couldn't refuse." Police state reporter Will Grigg has a better take on the story. In his most recent article entitled Disarm Subjects and Make Them Spy on Each Other, the Totalitarian Formula from the State of New York, He refers to the fellow named Benjamin M. Wassel of Silver Creek, a wounded Iraqi war veteran who happens to be the first resident of that tyranny to be arrested and to face prosecution under their new draconian firearms laws. And again, I put that term in great big quotes. The man was arrested during an undercover sting operation by state police, in which he sold an AR-15 rifle and six large-capacity magazines, back on January 24th. I won't repeat some of the quotes that Will Grigg does here, because they just plain disgust me, a little bit like the governor of Colorado. But he does say this. Joseph D'Amico, commissar of the New York State Police, gloated that, quote, our partnership with the Attorney General's office has resulted in the taking of a dangerous criminal off the streets. Like most things, says Will Grigg, that dribble down the tax-fattened chins of functionaries like D'Amico, that was a lie. Wassel has no criminal record, and although what he did violates the new gun law, it isn't legitimately a crime, since it was at one time at least protected by the Bill of Rights, and of course it didn't involve injury or fraud on his part. Indeed, the only fraud involved in the transaction, says Will Grigg correctly, was that perpetrated by officials in the office of the New York State Police and the Attorney General, who arranged the sale on false pretenses. Had Wassel conducted the same sales only just a few days earlier, they would have been perfectly legal. But nevertheless, now he's been charged with three felonies and a misdemeanor. And yet, somehow or other, he was released on his own recognizance, an implicit acknowledgement of the fact that he's not an actual criminal. But as bad as all of this is, the things that are going on in New York, it's not the worst of it. If they have their way, notes Grigg, New York police officials will be doing a brisk business real soon in incarcerating innocent gun owners because the state of New York has established an anonymous tip line, encouraging people to, as did the East German secret police, Stasi, and other totalitarian regimes, rat out their neighbors and, quote, report illegal gun owners in exchange for a $500 reward. You know what, folks? $500 is not even remotely as good as 30 pieces of silver at current rates. The would-be Judases in New York are getting ripped off, I think. Will Grigg concludes that every totalitarian police state requires the disarmament of their subjects and encourages them to spy on each other. And while New York isn't yet North Korea, it's certainly on the same trajectory. And while rights for the peons are being raped apace, nevertheless, if you're properly connected, you can do the exact opposite. A Monsanto rider has slipped through the Senate, according to the Activist Post, and the hourglass is running. The rider is Section 735, and it would prevent courts from halting the illegal planting of genetically modified crops, supposing that courts ever were to find fault with USDA-approved GM fields, and it's been slipped into a Senate continuing resolution, or spending bill, H.R. 933, and it blindsided an angry populace last week, says the story here, and gives little time for those who might understand what's going on to voice their complaint before it goes through the Senate. On Wednesday morning this week, H.R. 933 passed with the new rider, which has been dubbed by activists as the Monsanto Protection Act, hidden within it. And, of course, it goes without saying that the rider has nothing to do with proposed government spending to allegedly at least keep the evil beast running for another 6 months or so. On the good news side of the equation, in the attempt to disarm the American people, we have this from Steve Watson of Prison Planet, and that is that the government cover-up of its attempt to buy massive amounts of ammunition, billions of rounds, may have imploded. Silence, secrecy, and shoddy attempts at debunking the facts, says the story in the headline, have led to congressional scrutiny. That failure on behalf of the FedGov to provide any reasonable explanation as to why the Department of Akhtung Homeland Security is arming to the teeth with high-powered weapons that mere peons aren't permitted to have, and billions of hollow-point bullets, as well as crude efforts by the waste-stream media mouthpieces to debunk their preparations for war, have backfired massively, says Watson, propelling the story to the status of a downright virus. Some 15 congressmen have now written a letter to the Department of Homeland Security demanding to know why the federal agency is buying so many rounds of ammunition and whether the purchases are part of a deliberate attempt to restrict supply to the American people. And, of course, Big Sis has remained silent on the issue, has refused to answer questions from reporters, even from multiple elected representatives, about all their massive purchases of ammunition. Given that so far, no congressman has been able to get a straight answer from the Department of Homeland Security as to what's really going on here, and the fact that Senator Rand Paul, during his dramatic effort to get some answers from the Obama administration and their drone strike program last month, actually mentioned the arms buildup. Well, some are suggesting perhaps the senator would like to stage another filibuster in an attempt to get answers here. Other Congress critters are suggesting the better answer still might be just to cut off funds for Department of Homeland Security, and I can't argue with that one at all. And before we close today, we have to do at least a bit of an update on Cyprus and the shot heard round the world. Cyprus, according to the Telegraph, has overhauled two of its biggest banks in order to, at least for the time being, stave off collapse, and they are going to inflict losses of up to 40% now on the big depositors, but are going to, I love this, they're going to guarantee, thought they were guaranteed before, the deposits of those having less than 100,000 euros in what laughably now passes for a bank, as they restructure in an attempt to prevent economic collapse next week. And yes, should you still be wondering, the bank holiday there continues. At the earliest, it might be over sometime next week. Economist Peter Schiff, in a story that says that Cyprus has lifted the curtain on the worldwide debacle, notes that the chorus of condemnation that the action precipitated literally worldwide may have been the deciding factor in giving the Cypriot Parliament the confidence necessary to unanimously reject the bailout offer, in hopes that maybe Berlin will cave or Russia will swoop in with a bailout. Like others, of course, Russia and its big Gazprom oil and gas conglomerate would really like those minerals. Schiff says that the big mistake of the powers that be was to do their chicanery in plain view, in a manner that was not, quote, camouflaged by financial smoke and mirrors, like it usually is by the Federal Reserve. As your host, I still think there's more afoot. For example, the Investment Watch blog today has a headline about the fact that the Russian Treasury is now unable to meet its financial obligations. In an interesting interview today, Prime Minister Medvedev admitted that most Russian government agencies use Cyprus for their financial transactions. And the story asks, gee, how corrupt does a country have to be for its government agencies to use a tax haven for their financial transactions? But in any case, Russia will take a firm stand on Cyprus because the accounts of government structures have been blocked on the island, and there is concern about what may happen on the streets of Moscow as a result. Meanwhile, from Cyprus itself, an increasing number of merchants are saying no to payments by credit card. They prefer cash, for reasons that are increasingly obvious. But King World News has another interview up with well-known financial expert, gold market aficionado, and longtime trader Jim Sinclair, who says that when it comes to what's going on here, you have to look behind the scenes. In truth, Sinclair said, the IMF disaster which has just taken place in Cyprus is comparable to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand that started World War I. It's a major event in history. We have the mainstream media and some talking heads telling people that Cyprus is a tempest in a teapot, and that is completely false. He notes that the gamble here was that they, the banksters, were going to shift the onus of funds required from the busted banks to the depositors and away from those responsible, the central banks. This is another attempt at doing something different than QE, and it's also being proposed, he notes, in places like New Zealand and in Spain, but in smaller amounts. Obviously, he says, no amount of theft is acceptable, but what has happened, he says, was a historic mistake, because Christine Lagarde and the IMF have potentially ruined all of Ben Bernanke's work. Remember, he's been pushing quantitative easing, and they're talking about stealing it in a whole different way. It's also potentially ruined, says Sinclair, all of the work that central banks have been doing with their quantitative easing in order to attempt to maintain sovereign solvency. And what he says was, originally it was the IMF telling Cyprus to, quote, go to hell, and now it's in fact said to the world to go to hell. But now, says Sinclair, it may be the Western financial world that does that, and Chairman Ben Bernanke of the Fed knows it. Stories today are saying he may very well decide to get out of Dodge and not seek reappointment. Jim Sinclair puts it this way, quote, this historic event is one of the single largest and most important in my 50-plus years of being involved in markets. It is as serious as what I've said, and the chairman of the Federal Reserve is saying they're going to screw up all of my work, so basically, I don't want to be chairman, he thinks, when this hits the fan. Trends forecaster Gerald Celente, by the way, said something similar. It's about much more than Cyprus, bank runs, and stealing money from depositors. It's an alliance, he thinks, that leads to wars. The systems are breaking down. The whole thing is collapsing. And once again, he suggests, just like the Bible tells you, I note, in spite of the lies and manipulation in the precious metals, that there is no other money. That's it for today and this week. Shabbat shalom, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.